good to be back with you. Thank you for everybody who came out to the race yesterday. We had a blast. Did Mary Ellen make it in here this morning? Is she here? There she is. Stand up, Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen was my co-pilot. Give it up for Mary Ellen. And then we already had everybody else stand up last week, but the rest of the crew here, Wayne, Mike, Joyce, Andy, John, who else? All the different people that came and helped. Karen did our flag. Marion Moulette helped us with all of our shirts. I mean, like, it was such a group effort. And I loved being able to tell everybody yesterday when they were asking about the boat that, yeah, it was a combination of just lots of different people bringing their creative genius together. And frankly, it was just fun. It brought out the little boy in me that liked building model toys and planes, except this was so much bigger and it could float. So it was a blast. We had a ton of fun. Grace and Carolyn, it's always good to have you guys back. These are probably two of my favorite people that we have come in and sing. They are just such genuine artists that write and perform from their heart. And I've been privileged to see Grace several times, also with the Rebel Eves and on her own. She is just a gem. And Carolyn is a treat that comes along with her every so often and really ties in with a lot of the stuff that we're talking about. So when we've talked about ritual and ceremony, she has used music and percussion as a way of helping connect people to moments of transition in life. And music is so powerful to do that. Another way that we do that is music is art. We have some of our artists there. This is Jack's painting up front here that he comes in and brings. I love that he brings some of his paintings and just randomly displays them up front so that we can see them and celebrate and be in the moment and in the place where those paintings were captured. And these are all ways that we connect to deeper mysteries in life, right? We're a spiritual community, and we don't claim to have all the answers. As a matter of fact, we have lots of questions, and we sit with those questions using ritual and ceremony to help process the various things that come up in life. Because life can throw a lot of challenges at us. As Todd shared in his wonderful meditation, life is full of all kinds of challenges and moments that we don't realize that we wanted to really pay attention to until those moments are gone. I also realized this morning that I would have loved to have hung out with Skinny Dipping Todd, smoking cigars and listening to Marley. That sounds like fun. So it's awesome. Last week, Allison introduced the idea of integration, and we're going to kind of pull on that thread, but we're going to pair it with these twin practices that often act as bookends. And just by way of a little bit of a disclaimer and background on this series, we're talking about in the series, in the psychedelic summer, practices and things that help us in psychedelic therapy or psychedelic experiences. However, we are telling you that all of these things that we're talking about are things that are applicable to us regardless of whether you use those substances in that way or not. Any transformational experience, any mystical experience, any experience on a Sunday or in any type of ceremony that you participate in can benefit from these practices. And we're talking about intention. So intention is what you do before an experience, and integration, which is what you do after an experience, acts as lovely bookends. I will say that most of the psychedelic experiences that I've read about or heard about place a lot of emphasis on the intention, really encourage the integration, although that part tends to fall through the cracks a lot. It's easy for us to have huge moments. And like Todd said, they kind of come and they go, and we don't realize how big they were until much later. The beautiful thing is we can integrate those experiences at any point in our life. We don't have to wait until just after the experience, we can be integrating the things that are coming up for us from things that happened decades ago. So how do we make meaning from what we experience? That's the question that we want to answer this morning. And how do we live differently on the other side of those experiences? So the first thing I wanted to talk about in these bookends is integration. And the definition that we're working with for integration is a guiding aim or inner orientation that helps to shape or to direct the experience. It's a guiding aim or an inner orientation that helps to shape and direct the experience. And it's different than a goal, which seeks a specific outcome. An intention offers direction. So we were talking in pre-talk that an intention is more like a compass than a map. It doesn't tell you exactly where you are going. And if anybody's ever participated in any type of mind-expanding experience or really intense mystical or spiritual experience, you realize that any ideas of bringing a map of what you think is going to come out of it is a foolhardy endeavor. Once you engage in an experience, the experience takes on a nature of its own. But what an intention does is offer us a compass. It offers us a touchstone so that in the middle of these experiences, we can be reminded of what is important. And intentions often come from our values. Now, we're a values-based spiritual community, which means that instead of doctrines or dogma or religious texts, we have a set of values that guide and inform our practices here at C3. And whether you realize it or not, you have values too. When you get ticked off at the person who stopped too fast in front of you and you honk your horn, that was a value being violated. Anger comes more often than not from values that you hold that are violated. So we all have values that guide us or should guide our decisions. And this is where intention comes into play. Intention is putting specific wording and bringing our full attention to something that can reflect on our values. Intention versus expectation is more about setting a tone for the experience that we're about to have instead of controlling an outcome. And I know for those of you who are like me, we like having definitive outcomes to experiences. It makes us feel good to know that when we read the instructions and we make the measurements and when we cut the pieces and glue them all together, that the boat actually comes out looking like a boat and that it works. There is a sense of this feels right. When you make a measurement and a cut, and those cuts seam up together, and we know that things are happening the way that we expect them to happen. The problem is, very rarely in life do experiences match our expectations. And so when we go into an experience with a set of expectations, which is like a map, it can be easy to walk away feeling disappointed because your expectations weren't met. An intention is not about setting expectations for an experience. An intention is a guiding aim or an inner orientation. It's an internal compass that helps us to orient ourselves. But the path may unfold in surprising ways. And I can attest from my psychedelic experiences and any of my spiritual or mystical experiences I've had, that if you would have asked me before the experience how I would have thought it would have transpired, and then afterwards, if it transpired the way that I would have thought, rarely would those two things have met up. But to quote the Stones, you don't always get what you want, but you get what you need. And the things that need to come up, come up. Especially if you can craft intentions that approach it with a posture of curiosity and openness. I wrote down a few sample intentions that I've either used or have given as examples when people are looking for how to set intentions. And in this practice, please don't limit this to just spiritual experiences or mystical or psychedelic experiences. This can be so powerful for everything from your day-to-day life and waking up to that family function that you're dreading, or that really big conference you're going to, or whatever it is, that big life decision. The intention that you bring into it can help shape and craft the experience. So here are some sample intentions that would be examples of ways to guide or direct an experience. To befriend the parts of myself that I have ignored or rejected. Allison talked last week about IFS, internal family systems, which I'm a huge fan of. And in the internal family systems, most of our dysfunctional parts arise with these pieces of ourselves that we have exiled because they may have served an original purpose to protect us, but over time, those parts of ourselves became exiled and we tried to hide them away. Integration is about bringing those parts together in a whole, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But a good intention would be to befriend the parts of myself that I have ignored, to release what no longer serves me, to grieve what I have not allowed myself to mourn, to sit with my pain instead of running from it. These are all examples of intentions, ways that we can intentionally bring ourselves into an experience and be open to what transpires. Now, befriending or sitting with your pain instead of running from it is a different intention than saying, my intention is to figure out why I have this chronic disease. Or my intention is to figure out how to get rid of this thing. Like, you see the difference there, that we're bringing a posture of openness because we don't know what's coming out of it. It's sitting with those questions that I was talking about earlier, rather than rushing so quickly to try to find the answers. And one little piece I'll say about intentions before we move on. There are micro and macro intentions, and both can be helpful in your day-to-day life. An example of some micro intentions could be something as simple as, today I am going to be more curious. And everything that comes up, if you just simply remind yourself, and if you can take an intention and boil it down to even a single word, if you can distill it down that far, it'll be so much easier to remember. Perhaps you can write it on a rock or a stone that you keep in your pocket, or something that gives you a physical touch point to make it more real. And then every time you feel that stone, you can be reminded, curiosity. My intention is curiosity. So when you lose it on the person in front of you who cuts you off in traffic, to say, okay, my intention was curiosity. What was going on there? What's happening in me that made me respond that way? And you can quickly see how even those micro intentions can have big, big effects on you. Intentions can take many forms. It can be a word, a phrase, a mantra, or even a felt or somatic sense. Allison talked a lot about some of the somatic therapy. And for those of you who can really get into this part, and I include myself in the skeptics category, I have a hard time integrating so much of the somatic stuff for me because my head is such a safe space. This is where I process everything, that it becomes difficult for me to trust my body instead of going to my head first to make sense of what's happening in my body. But a somatic experience or a part of your body could be an intention. So you can make an intention of connecting with your heart space in an experience. One of the guided experiences that I participated in that has stuck with me. The person who is leading it gave the very simple direction to say with your hands or say with your body what you wish to say with your heart. So if you want your heart to be more open, to have your hands open on your lap and to mirror that posture of openness with your hands that you're trying to. So you see, this moves us from our head and from this being something that only exists here, and it puts us back into our bodies. And again, it helps us to integrate, to become a whole person, because we are more than just brains walking around in a flesh sack, aren't we? We are living, embodied beings. So that takes us to the next part, which is integration. Before I get to that part there, I want to talk about the importance of integration by using one of my favorite quotes about this from Alan Watts. And he says, quite simply, if you get the message, hang up the phone. For psychedelic drugs are simply instruments like microscopes, telescopes, and telephones. The biologist, he says, does not sit with his eye permanently glued to the microscope. He goes away and he works on what he has seen. That's humorous, but it's also a little bit challenging because I have very much been guilty of saying, okay, that was a great experience. Now where's the next one? That was a fun ride. Let's go do another one. Let's go try that one over there. And we can, in our rush to try new things, we can move from experience to experience to experience without taking the time to let those things settle, to learn what needs to come out of it. So let's talk about integration. The definition that we're working with for this is processing the gained insights from an experience into the desired areas of your life. It comes from the Latin word, which means to bring together parts into the whole. Any of you math nerds remember about learning about integers and how you move towards whole numbers and bringing things back together into a place of wholeness? E pluribus unum means what? Out of many, one. Be nice if we could live that out. But it's an aspirational, you could say intention, if you will, for our country, that our country is trying to live up to. So this integration is taking these many parts and bringing them together to make a whole. Coming from an arts background, I think of artists who work with pieces of tile or glass or colored stones. And they use those different parts that look seemingly unconnected, but when they bring them together into that art piece, you see something emerge out of many, one. So transformational experiences, which is what we're talking about, which can include psychedelic experiences, but doesn't have to. Transformational experiences is any part of our life where we can experience transformation. And that's a broad definition because that happens in spiritual communities like this on Sundays. It happens at cardboard boat races and downtown. It happens in mindfulness groups, and it happens in our bedrooms and in our living rooms. It can happen anywhere we're at if we take the time to open ourselves up to the experience. Transformational experiences wouldn't be possible without the deep work that follows them. In biology, there's something called phenotypic integration, which is the process by which complex systems are formed by combining similar parts. So an example of a phenotypic integration is in the flowers that we see. When you look at the shape and the color of the petals, and you look at the pistil and the stamen, and all of those different parts that have over time evolved to create this whole that we know of as a flower. And that particular flower had an intention to attract a particular type of insect or other ways of pollination, out of those many complex parts comes a whole. Our consciousness works similarly. New insights must be woven into existing neural networks. Now, I wish I could have Allison talk about this because she could talk about this a lot with a lot more authority. But if you study any type of neurodevelopment in our brains and you understand neural pathways and that you recognize that neurons that fire together, you may have heard the expression neurons that fire together wire together, that the more that we think about certain things in a certain way, that those ways of thinking form a groove, if you will, like on a record, on a vinyl record. And that groove, over time, can be easy to fall back into. So if you wonder why you are so quick to throw up the finger and honk the horn at that person who cut you off, possibly with a little bit of inner work, with some curiosity, by bringing some intentionality to the experience, you may begin to find out what's going on under the surface. And you may realize, oh, there is a neural groove in that record that has been well worn from many years of doing that exact same thing. And it takes work to break out of those neural network constraints, to change the way that we're thinking. We now know that psychedelics are a fantastic way for helping to break that quickly. That's why Michael Pollan's book is called How to Change Your Mind. Because quite simply, it has been found that in psychedelic therapy that these patterns that we so quickly fall into can be disrupted through a psychedelic experience, much in the same way that a snow globe that gets shaken and turned back over has a completely different setting than when it was done. But as I said, we don't have to simply rely on these psychedelic experiences. We can experience transformation in our day-to-day life. There's the idea of post-elevation blues, which perhaps you've experienced. It's a very real thing in a psychedelic experience to have a day or two afterwards where your high serotonin during the experience is followed by a little bit of a serotonin crash, and you can almost have a little bit of a blues experience in the day or so following. But this is not unique just to psychedelics. If you've ever been to a really, really good conference, like a weekend conference, or you've heard a speaker, you went away to a retreat, and you just had this amazing transformational experience. Have you ever experienced that when you come back, you kind of feel almost a little bit like you bounce the other direction? You're kind of a little bit depressed and discouraged for a little bit. Like you absorbed all this great information, and then you have to go back to the real world. And your spouse is still annoying you in the same way that they're doing it before. And you're like, why has this not changed? I thought I just learned all these great tricks. It takes time to change and to work that in. And that is the power and the hard work of integration. It's taking what we've learned, what has been revealed, and it allows it to grow. It's about noticing what wants to change instead of rushing to do something about it. And that is so tough for those of us who are project-oriented, who love getting things done. When we realize, oh, this was the eureka moment. This is, and we probably have written it down in our journal somewhere. I bet if you went back and if you look through journals or old notes from conferences, you probably have dozens of epiphanies that you've long since forgotten about. Because it's tough work to take that epiphany and to actually integrate it into our life. That's the hard work of these experiences. And that's why people like Alan Watts say, when you get the message, hang up the phone. You don't need to keep chasing after experiences when you already have enough to work on with what has been revealed already. It's about allowing your experiences to, I like this mental picture, to allow these experiences to compost into wisdom. It takes time. Composting, for any of you gardeners out there who have tried it, is not an instant process. There is no microwave composter. It takes time to let those things settle. Rainer Maria Rilke, in a 1903 letter to his protege, he was a poet who wrote beautifully about many things. He said about this idea of integration, he said, "I want to beg you as much as I can, dear sir, to be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and to try to love the questions themselves like locked rooms and like books that are written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answers, which cannot be given to you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer." What a beautiful expression. To learn to love the questions, to not try to beat down every locked door, and to rush to the quick answers that make us feel like, ah, I've got it, now I can move on. To sit with that uncertainty. And that's why integration is probably one of the least sexy parts about this whole thing to talk about, because it's not a very pleasant thing to integrate. Most of the integrative work that you do is with other people, but it happens internally. So we do a lot of integration in our pre-talk and our post-talk. This is where we kind of take these concepts and we throw out questions and we talk about how it fits. But if we're going to experience lasting transformation, chances are, no matter how great of a talk you hear up here on a Sunday, if any real lasting change is going to happen, it's going to happen because you take the time to integrate it into your life within the privacy of your own inner world. Perhaps you've done some journaling, some thinking, some writing, some reflection, or just sitting in silence with what is. And out of that will emerge, as Rilke said, maybe without noticing it, that you will perhaps gradually, someday in the future, live into the answer that you are seeking. There's a kind of transformation that asks you to become something else. And that's the type of theology I grew up with. Perhaps you might recognize this from Christian theology. In Systematic Theology, which was a horrible book, in my opinion, that tried to break down theology into these bite-sized little chunks that could make it so easy to pass on and remember. Sanctification in Systematic Theology is defined as a progressive work of God and man that makes us more and more free from sin and more like Christ in our actual lives. Now, I've preached on this in the past. I know what is meant by it, but I am fundamentally flustered by a theology that says that who you are is inherently broken and flawed, and that the only way you can become fixed or whole is by you turning into something else. By this external thing coming in and making you better because who you were isn't good enough. That's the theology of original sin. We're all born broken, sinful, and the only thing that makes us whole or integrated is Christ. Now, there are some ways that you can talk about this theology without such stark terms, and Richard Rohr and others do a good job of giving us better perspectives of the Christ consciousness. But I want to remind us that the work of integration, the work of change, is not because you're a bad person trying to become better. The work that you do around your shadow, and we mentioned this in pre-talk, you know, the shadow work is so important, but only if it's held alongside of a deep love and appreciation of who you are. That you are more than your shadows. You are more than your flaws. And that the act of transformation happens when we become more like our truest self. In integration, this act of moving towards wholeness is about taking all of these disparate parts and pulling them together so that they can make a whole. Phrase I'm going to leave us with here for contemplation comes from Carl Jung, who reminds us that the privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are. The privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are. So friends, may we begin and do the hard work of integration in our lives. And may we keep at it, because it's worth doing for us to become who we truly are. The world needs us to be who we truly are and to bring that light into the world. Thank you.